My job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them, and I will do it by whatever means necessary.
Welcome to the Black Girls Heal podcast, where we talk about healing our intimacy disorders, unresolved trauma, and building a healthy relationship with first ourselves and then others. Every episode, we will talk about advice you can apply today to break unhealthy patterns and grow in your self-worth. I'm Sheena Lachey, love addiction coach and trauma specialist. Let's begin. Hello, hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Black Girls Heal. I'm sending you all so much love on today. So in today's episode, we're going to be talking about family trauma. It has been a minute since I've talked specifically about family trauma. And if you're a long-term listener, you know that when I talk about intimacy disorders, I talk about how all of this is just a trauma response. Love addiction is a trauma response. Love avoidance is a trauma response. The way that we fix this is to not just focus on skills and doing relationships differently, focusing on boundaries, but we have to get at the root. We have to look at what are the things, what are the beliefs, what are the things that have been normalized that have made us think that these types of relationship dynamics are healthy, and looking at our trauma stories is part of it. And so this was inspired by so many conversations that I have with my clients about the nature of their relationships with their family and how this aligns or how this matches the things that happen in their personal relationships, whether or not it's friends, whether or not it is romantic partners, work colleagues as well. We tend to repeat the same types of traumas and make excuses for when people are treating us badly. So in today's episode, I want to talk about three or four things that may have happened in your family history that is not normal, so that if or when someone treats you in the same way, you can spotlight it and say, hey, I don't think that this should happen. When it comes to the case or when it comes to the experience of love addicts, our problem is self-abandoning. Our problem is thinking that the ways that people hurt us aren't that big of a deal, that we're making it up, that we're being too sensitive, and or we try to fight with people to try to defend ourselves. You can't see my air quotes. Well, actually, I don't even need to air quote it. You are actually defending yourself by telling people what you don't like and what you don't appreciate. But when you put a lot of energy, the problem is that love addicts will tend to keep fighting with folks to try to convince people who have made a decision that they are not going to see them, that they're not going to value them, that they're not going to honor them. They will put a whole lot of energy and try to change someone else and change their experience of them instead of leaving, instead of moving around. And what they don't realize is that they're continuing to repeat their same trauma because you're just feeding this machine that tells you that you're not worth paying attention to, you're not worth changing for, you're not worth being protecting, because you keep going back to the same people who are dead set on not protecting you for their own reasons that have nothing to do with your worth and value, that have everything to do with them. But because this has been your norm your whole life, it feels like it's you. So that is what we're talking about today. Let's go ahead and jump on in and look at some examples of these types of traumas.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Before we get started, let's take a small break to say thank you to this week's sponsors.
Attention to all my proud plant parents. It is time to give all of your plant babies the best nutrition you can, starting from the bottom up. And that starts with the best soil to help them grow happy, nourished, and strong. Coast of Maine is an organic soil brand that is approved for organic growing and has been sourced from ocean waters and farms for over 28 years. With a full range of products that support every garden and lawn, Coast of Maine products are made to restore roots to the natural world. If your soil lacks appropriate nutrients for success, by adding Coast of Maine products, it will help regenerate the healthy microbes in your soil and set you up for gardening success. And if you have a vegetable garden, not only do you benefit via an abundant harvest, but find that there is less need to maintain and feed throughout your season. Coast of Maine continually perfects the art and science of sourcing, mixing, and composting products worthy of the people and place that inspired their brand and the healthier world it was built to serve. Coast of Maine believes in nurturing relationships with local retailers. The products are carried by tons of local retail partners who can provide advice and insight that is not found in the big box stores. Costa Maine knows from beginner to expert, anyone who takes a hand to the land has something to offer the growing community for gardeners everywhere, which is why I love how they make organic gardening simple and approachable for everyone. So let's get growing. Visit CostaMaine.com to find a local retailer near you. Coast of Maine, like the state with an E.com. Okay, so these are all examples of emotional abuse, emotional neglect, also mental and spiritual abuse as well. But we can talk about those examples in detail. These are just picking in detail on a different day in a different episode. Of course, we talk about this more in our programs. But for today, let's go ahead and jump in with just a few examples. Also, because, you know, these whenever I talk about trauma, it gets you thinking. It gets you thinking, especially if you can relate to it. As much as you may think, I want to hear everything and I want to know everything all at once. If you have ever read a book that's actually a very good book on childhood trauma or on relational trauma, you can't read those books in one sitting. You normally need to take a break and either to calm down, to call your therapist, to talk to a friend, to journal. If you're not in touch with your body and your feelings, you might get distracted or numb out or just want to binge on Netflix and not know why all of a sudden you are so distracted from this book that you felt was really, that really you felt like was illuminating parts of your life, is because your body's like, oh shit, this is scary. This is a lot. This is painful. Right. And so we're going to just dip our toe into some of these trauma things, especially because we want to make sure that you have skills to support you as you're working through this. So a pieces at the time is the best course of action. So one of the first ways that family trauma can seem like it's normal to you, because this is how your family tends to interact with you, is that you find that they can only talk about what they have going on, but they never have time to talk about you. When it's time to talk about you, they're busy, they're distracted, they have a lot of things going on in their personal life, so they really can't pay attention to what you have going on. They don't want to follow up with you. They don't remember to follow up with you. And anytime you try to call them on it, then they refer back to what I've already shared, that they don't have the emotional space. But this is a recurring pattern. It's a recurring pattern that their problems, their needs are more important. And you know that they're more important because they use you as the person that they're going to dump all these things on, that they want you to solve their problems. They want you to listen. They want you to finance what's going on. They want you to pick a side. You're consistently doing all this emotional labor for them, and they're telling you to wait. And of course, this primes you to be in relationships where this is the reoccurring experience as well, where you start to feel as if your problems are not that important, that you're a burden and all of that, when really this is starting with the people who are telling you these things. You as a child, what you want and what you need is important. Your voice matters. Many of us grew up, or maybe are still in, I was about to use the present tense, growing up, because, you know, if you are someone who still has your parents around, you are still going to be their child no matter how old you get. That person is still going to be your parent. So you can still continue to get emotional wounds and traumas no matter how old you are and no matter how long this has been happening. These things are things that you're never supposed to feel. You're not supposed to have an experience where you're constantly discounted, dismissed, discarded by the people who are important in your life. And so there's never going to be a time, if you're waiting for the time that this doesn't hurt, or you stop caring what your daddy says, or you stop caring what your mama says, or you stop caring what Aunt Sabrina says to you. That's actually one of my aunt's names, but she is lovely. So shout out to Aunt Sabrina. I love you very much. But you stop caring about what these other people around you say, and you're just waiting to the place where you get numb. You're not supposed to get numb. That is a response of your trauma, to shut off your heart, shut off your emotions. That is a sign that you are in an unsafe space. You're supposed to be able to feel everything that you need to feel. You're supposed to be able to express what you need to feel. And your family is supposed to be a safe space for that. And so if that becomes your normal and something that you have to go into shut off response with, that is something for you to pay attention to. And also, if you find that, again, you constantly have to argue with people to validate that your feelings matter, to validate that you're worth listening to validate that maybe they should stop being so selfish and pay attention to your story. And that's what happens every time you're with them. That is a very emotionally activating, a very overwhelming, a very toxic cycle to be in, which is why so many people who can have love addictive relationships can also be very love avoidant, because to be in relationship with folks means, and to share yourself means, that you're setting yourself up for people to not have time for you. You're setting yourself up for people to make fun of your emotions and your feelings and to invalidate you. You're setting yourself up for disappointment. So why bother, right? So you set yourself up to have that wall. So if you have relationships in your family where they only have space for themselves and not you, that is not normal. The second type of trauma that is not normal is if you have family members who are constantly repeating your flaws. So I saw a TikTok the other day that talks about something adjacent to this, but that is not necessarily equal to this. So this person was saying that there are some of us who are family members. There's an age that they have us stuck at, and they're never going to be able to see us past that. So some of you are in relationships or have family relationships that they are always going to see you as 16 years old, even though you're in your 40s with a mortgage, and they're going to continue to talk to you in the way that they saw you, not even who you were, but how they saw you as a 16-year-old. Even though you've grown, matured, excelled, they're still going to treat you in that way, for better or for worse, whether or not that is in a babying type of way or whether or not you were scapegoated, and they still see you as this ruffian who can't get it right or whatever, you may be in the middle, right? So there may be some of us who we are frozen at a certain age, 16, 25, 4, 3, in our families of origin. But sometimes, to my point, that can kind of have some positive connotations. It may be annoying to constantly be babied or whatever, but there's no malice behind it. Some of us have experiences where not only are we frozen at a certain age, we are frozen at whatever story they have that has us at our worst. So whether or not in their mind, whether or not this is true or not, you are argumentative, you are selfish, you are rude, you are a burden, you're in the way, you are a failure, you're never going to be anything. They have you permanently frozen in that place, and there's nothing that you can ever do that's going to make them graduate you to another stage. And so if you're constantly fighting with this ghost that does not exist because you're trying to get them to see you in a certain light, that is an unhealthy family dynamic and a cycle that you are stuck in that you need to exit. And in all of these, y'all, part of the journey in this is finding yourself. What makes this really hard is what I've said before, is this information is so great in helping you be like, wait, this is what's happening. This doesn't have to be my truth. There's actually words and language to this. This isn't just my experience. Absolutely not. I can tell you this because I've seen this over and over and over and over and over in thousands of people's stories. And if you've worked with any healers who are also experienced, they will probably validate and say the exact same thing. You know, what happens with trauma is that it's very isolating, and the impact of trauma is very shaming. And so shame keeps you isolated. Shame keeps you stuck. Shame keeps you thinking that you're the only one who's dealing with this. And even if you're not the only one, that you're the worst off out of everybody. Everybody else has gotten this mastered. Everybody else is dealing with this better than you are. And shame sucks. Shame is a liar. And shame needs to be rebuked and sent back to the pits of hell. Like, you are doing amazing. And once you are able to learn how to validate yourself and who you are, then you're able to move forward. But you're not ever taught how to do this when you grow up in these families of origin. And when people try to tell you things and they try to give you a way out, you're wrestling with all the limiting beliefs and thoughts that you have inside of you. Your thoughts are still stronger. You have the information, you got the books, you got the journal entries that are telling you that this is wrong, but the voices that you've been given, and the voices that have been nurtured, and the voices that have been also keeping you safe, as critical as these voices are, they have helped you avoid a lot of disappointment. They probably helped motivate you and propel you forward in a lot of ways. And so for someone to come, even with positive intent, and give you a more positive spin on that, that can be very threatening, and it could be very hard to let go. And also, and this is me as a healer who helps other people heal, I cannot tell you how many times as a healer, I have had to talk to my trusted sources because I can see it very clearly for other people, but for myself, there have been so many times that I've had a limiting belief or thought, and I'm like, I need you to tell me if what I'm saying is rational, or I know that this is not rational, but I do not know how to break out of it. Right? And sometimes I can reverse engineer it and say, okay, if I had Sally Sue in front of me, and this is what she was experiencing, what would I tell her? Right. And sometimes I could do that. But when you are functioning with your own inner child, having guided sources to work, help you work through this is vital. Vital, not nice, not a good to have. It is vital, vital. The same point that some of us have family members who are stuck at a certain age, or they see us stuck at a certain age. For most of us, especially if you have not started your inner healing work, but even those of us who are knee deep, we all have inner children, inner teenagers that are frozen at a certain age. So even when we try to use our adult mind, we are incapable of doing that because the hurt and pain that we have is stuck at the age 6, it's stuck at age 8, it's stuck at age 12, it's stuck at freaking being in utero, because trauma starts when you are in the womb if you were not in a healthy place, or whatever, what traumas your mother was going through while you were being formed before you even were birthed into this world. We have science that validates that, right? And so there's no way that a mind and a heart that is stuck at 3, even though she's a grown woman, even though she's been able probably to help other people with things, and she might be the mother or the counselor of the group and the wise person, you need your own support and you need your own help. So I really, really encourage y'all to make sure that you are looking for those resources, that you're making those investments and time and money and energy with people to help you break these cycles. Otherwise, you continue to repeat them. And then that shame I talked about, you continue to think that there's something wrong with you when you're not. There's nothing wrong with you. As humans, we're not meant to live in this world alone. Even those of us who are introverts and those of us who tend to be more reserved, you are still ideally supposed to live your life in relationship. We are built to be in tribes and in community. And so whether or not your tribe is 3 people deep or 30 people deep, when you do not have a trusted source, that is painful. And there is a gap that no matter how much repression and avoidance is not going to go away, which is why some of us are prone to, when we think we find someone who's giving us what we need, we will overattach to them and not realize that we've invited just the big bad wolf version 2, because we were so used to the big bad wolf in the first form. The third type of trauma that can be very normalized that we need to understand is traumatic is when your family will blame their, actually, let me take it back. When your family is being emotionally abusive or physically abusive or financially abusive, and you stand up for yourself, either by setting boundaries with them. Maybe you match their energy back. Maybe someone's put hands on you and you push them back. Maybe someone has called you names forever. And then one time you say, you know what? You are such an asshole. And from then on, that moment that you finally responded to their abuse is forever used as a weapon against you. They will use that to validate the fact that you are so, so mean, that you're a bad daughter, that you're a bad sister, that you are a bad aunt, that you are so emotionally abusive. They start calling you emotionally abusive. They start saying that they feel like they need to be protected against you. They start to say how you don't listen and how you have made them feel like the worst thing ever. And you, because you spent your whole life taking this abuse and personalizing this and thinking that things are your fault, you take this and you run with it, especially if you lean towards codependence or if you tend to be someone who just naturally has a more generous personality. You don't understand and you don't see this as manipulation. The way that this works with my clients is whether or not we're talking about family relationships or friendships, but especially romantic partnerships. They will come and tell me a conflict or something that's going on with a person and the story. And after they told me these really horrific things that this person has said and done to them and completely disrespected them and dishonored them, then they will tell me, yeah, but then I said this to them, so it's equal. And I'm like, girl, but they did all this stuff to you. Well, yeah, but you know, there's validation on both sides. You know, we both have things to work on. And I have to be like, and this is a trigger warning for anyone who's a domestic violence survivor, or if you're currently in it, But if someone came and if they were hitting you consistently, they were hitting you over the head, they kept hitting you, hitting you, hitting you, and you're like crumpled on the ground on the floor, and there was a frying pan, and you were able to grab the frying pan and you were able to hit them in the head to get them off of you, is that equal? Is you defending yourself and knocking this person out equal to the fact that they were on top of you doing real damage to you? And especially if this is something they do all the time, does that make you an abuser because you defended yourself? Whenever I give an example similar to that effect, they're like, well, no. And I'm like, that is what's happening. You have been a punching bag. And unfortunately for some folks, it is physical as well. But you have been used and abused by these people forever. And the one time that you defend yourself, now they're projecting all of their things onto you. And because you have not been able to establish a healthy sense of self, they have done such a great job at stripping you from being able to do that. You believe it. And so now you go into every argument, now you go into every disagreement, and you either concede quickly, you apologize to them who just got through abusing you, or you convince yourself that there's not a problem at all and you're just being silly because you don't want to be a mean person or you don't want to be selfish or whatever the name is that they've told you. And that is not healthy and that is not normal. I need to be clear that when this is a consistent type of abuse that happens with your family and loved ones, I am all for using your voice, especially if you have been voiceless in your past. But you need to be very mindful about your expectations when you use your voice. If you go into any type of experience when you're telling people how you feel or what they did that was hurtful or harmful to you with the hope that they're going to get it, that they are going to see your point of view, that they're going to validate you, that they're going to say, I'm sorry, and have real remorse, you're setting yourself up for disappointment because the system works as long as you remain bad, as long as you remain the victim, as long as you remain the issue. They are able to stay in power. They're able to stay blameless. They're able to even stay the victim. You know, you're asking me to change or you're asking me to do these things and you know that this is hard for me. You know that I'm depressed. You know that I'm anxious. You know your father left me. You know this. And they continue to expect you to carry not only all the emotional labor of the relationship, but to stay their punching bag. They get to win as long as you feel as if you are the one in the wrong. And so whenever you go into these relationships with people, you got to understand or go into these conversations, you got to understand that you are not dealing with someone who's rational. Just because they are wearing clothes just like you and they're forming sentences just like you, and they may be functional members of society on the outside, that does not mean that they are not perpetrators. It does not mean that they're not abusive. It does not mean that they maybe are not even narcissists. And the more you try to rationalize with people who are hell-bent on seeing you in a certain way and seeing themselves in a certain way, and forever being entitled, you're going to, again, be arguing with a ghost, arguing with someone and something that does not exist. Your expectation when it comes to boundary-setting relationships or boundary-setting conversations is your own self-realization and your own standing up for your inner little child. And that's the only purpose. If they get it, then okay. If they don't get it, then okay. If they rage, then okay. If they're sad, then okay. I'm not saying this for you. I'm saying this for me. And when you really get good at this, then sometimes you realize that there are moments for you to say this conversation to them. And there are moments that you just need to know the truth for yourself. And that's enough. And you're able to more separate and differentiate from these people and these experiences.
Hey, we hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. Let's take a quick break to say thanks to this week's sponsors.
Who remembers watching The Fresh Prince growing up? I don't know about you, but Monday nights, my family was always tuned in. To be able to watch an accomplished Black family that balanced culture, art, humor, and togetherness was so inspiring and healing. And watching Will, Carlton, Ashley, Hillary, and even Aunt Viv during her infamous dance sequence go through so many coming-of-age moments as they discovered themselves and what was most important to them absolutely helped me have confidence to fully embody who I am. Cultural figures and moments like this are so important for us to continue to talk about, review, and celebrate as Black people. And if you're interested in learning more about these types of stories, you have to check out NPR Podcast. NPR has a new collection of podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy and resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Each episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black experience. From Megan Thee Stallion to the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Michelle Obama to the women behind the Montgomery bus boycott, there's no limit to the range of NPR. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts. For this episode of Black Girls Heal, we've partnered with eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. The people who truly get us on a soul level are priceless. They're the ones you can have the most ridiculous inside jokes with, who get what you're feeling, what you need on a bad day, and are the first people you think of when you have some free time and want to spend it with company. To find these people, you have to be compatible. And compatibility involves so much more than just sharing the same interests in music and film. You have to connect to those who have the same values, complement your temperament, and want the same things in the world. That's why we've partnered with eHarmony. Their compatibility quiz helps your personality come out more in your profile, which makes all other profiles on eHarmony way more interesting and easier to find a match and more fun to read. They want you to find someone who gets you, so give eHarmony a shot. Get started with their compatibility quiz so that you can find someone you can be yourself with. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today. The last type of trauma that I'm going to talk about today, or the last example of a type of emotional abuse and neglect trauma that I'm going to say for today before we close up is, I close my note, is if they flake on promises and gaslight you to think that you are inconsiderate or selfish. I'll say this again. If they flake on promises and things that they said that they were going to do for you and gaslight you to think that you're inconsiderate or selfish. So again, another TikTok example. This was probably several months ago. I can't remember the name of the character, but whatever the name of the character, anyone who is on social media, especially TikTok, there's like this little puppet that goes, "She's a wonderful girl. Can she be any cuter?" I'm not going to delete that because I'm not going to be able to look up this person's name. It's like this like little blue or green like little puppet, right? And it's gone viral, like this little cutesy song or whatever. Anyways. Someone is yelling the name of this person on the other side of the screen and I can't hear you. So I'm so sorry. Anyways, this girl requested for her sister to, she was asked, "What do you want for your birthday?" She was asked, "What do you want for your birthday?" And she said, "I just want a cake with this character on it." Right? So easy. You can go to any grocery store with a little picture and get the cake for $20 max. Right? So they tell her that she's going to get this cake, right? So the TikTok is, and they say the backstory, the TikTok is them showing the cake to her and they tell her to close her eyes and everything is a big surprise. And then she opens her eyes and it's just a regular birthday cake and they're laughing. And she's like looking at them. She's like, "Wait, what's going on?" And you can see that she is so hurt by this. And they're like, "Well, you know, well, we changed our mind, da, 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 whatever, but it's still a cake, ha, 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 ha." And you just get anyone who's been on the experience of being with family members or people who consistently do these types of things, you know, you absolutely know that nice, nasty, that sinister, and you might not call it this, especially if you're deep in it. But especially if you may have seen this happen to other people, sometimes it's easier to see with other people than yourself. I'll just own it for myself and for a good number of people in the comments who are not strangers to narcissistic abuse and this moving the goalposts and all the ways that they will get you to doubt whether or not your needs and your wants are important. And will intentionally, they know exactly what you want. They may even ask you what you want, and they will intentionally give you something that is not what you want, and or maybe even the opposite of what you want to test you or to get you to be normalized, to not fight back when this happens, to humiliate you sometimes, to get you used to accepting less than what they want to give you, and to remind you that you are not worth all of that. And if you do require more of it, then you're being inconsiderate. Again, you're being selfish. You're not seeing the bigger picture. It's not that big of a deal. It's still a birthday cake. Meanwhile, you are in a mess of all these different emotions of hurt, of betrayal, of confusion, of self-denial, of rage. Rage that is for the most part, really clustered. You're not free to even share the rage. Otherwise, it's going to probably be an emotional punishment that comes after that. They're going to start raging at you, flipping all the things that they have done and putting it onto you, maybe calling you a narcissist. I can't tell you how many people that I work with who are victims of narcissistic abuse, where their question to me is, I wonder if I'm a narcissist sometimes, because they are having honest thoughts. So when you are a victim of narcissistic abuse and emotional abuse, it is so prevalent and is so insidious in your life, so that whenever you have a normal, this literally a normal thought about your own needs and wants, that has been so coded to equal selfishness. Any type of consideration about yourself, as simple as, I feel cold right now, and I wish that the temperature was a little bit warmer. You have been groomed your whole life to think that if you dare to ask for that when other people want it to be colder, or even if they haven't even said it, like you're having a whole story in your mind. You have been so groomed to think that any consideration of yourself means that you are the worst person ever, that you are selfish, that you are inconsiderate. And so you have been taught to forget yourself and to abandon yourself. So when these family members make these promises to you, when they say they're going to show up for you, when they say they're going to do something for you, and they either half-ass it, don't do it at all, then you express legitimate pain on the fact that they let you down. You've expressed legitimate pain on the fact that you needed them. Then now you're the one who was selfish. Now you're the one who is not giving folks benefit of the doubt. You're the one who's always, you've always made things about you. It's always such an ironic retort and slur that they will give you. You've always been like this. Meanwhile, you have not received anything. You have been the person who's always given and given and given, hoping that one day is going to be enough, hoping that one day they're going to validate you, see you as a human, see you as deserving. And there's never going to be enough to give because you've never been the problem. You've never been the one where the deficit has started. It's been them. But because this has started since before birth, it is so hard for you to see this. And that's why it's so important for you to be around community, around healing, around coaching, around resources and people that are going to help you break out of this cycle, because you can't see what looks completely normal to you. I think about, I've been watching a lot of videos of people who are colorblind, and I've been meeting people who are colorblind as well. So it's just something in the energy, I guess, around me right now. And to not, it's like, you have one of the different types of color blindness and someone is trying to point out pink to you and you can't see pink, right? Everything is brown or some shade of green. Everything is muddled. And so even though it's crystal clear to other people, you with your best attempts to see something, and you might be able to learn a couple tricks to kind of work through it a little bit and to figure out ways to go around the ways that you may not be abled in that area. One of the people that I met, it was colorblind growing up. And so he said that the way that he worked through it, it was just to make sure he always read the names of the colors on the crayons to make sure that he was doing it the right way. And then once all the other kids in the class found out that he was colorblind, they would start to rip the paper off the crayons to make sure that he couldn't do it right. And isn't that horrible? That's such a... And he kind of like glossed over that kind of stuff and talked about all these other ways that he's worked to make sure that he was independent. And I'm like, oh, that sounded like that was traumatic. And that's so interesting how trauma in some ways can be our biggest propeller to make us so that we can be successful in some ways. But he was almost a 50-year-old man talking about this. And if I would have pressed a little bit more, I could have got him crying talking about it. But I'm off the clock when I meet people in real life. Like, I'm just going to listen. If you want to tell me your story, that's fine. But we're having cocktails here. I'm not helping you process your deepest trauma. I'm trying to get up and, my karaoke song is coming up next. So, That is killing the vibe. But my point is, he had learned all these different tricks around the ways that he was not able to see the colors in the ways that other people did. And there were some limits to that. And so it wasn't until he had extra tools or really people who supported him and who protected him and stopped the kids from doing this to him to realize that that wasn't right for him to be able to make these changes and for him to believe that he was capable and that these things did not define him, that this way that he was differently able than the other people in the class or even in the world did not mean that he was not worthy of doing the things that he wanted to do in life. And so it's the same for y'all. Whether or not these are things, the things that your family and friends, and this is air quote friends, your family and friends and ex-partners or current partners have told you that you are imperfect or wrong, whether or not that's their projection or whether or not there are real growth areas for you, that does not eliminate or decide the fact that you are not worthy of all the love, respect, and care that you want. It does not deem you worthless, but these people would make you want to feel that way. And what's worse is they can do that because you secretly believe it yourself. And this is why when it comes back to when I talk about breaking these traumas and everything and breaking these patterns of love addiction, I keep coming back to you have to look at why is it that when someone is treating you in ways that that are less than what you want, you are still there in a way. And this is not the same as you as me saying that their bad behavior and their abuse towards you is your fault. It is not your fault. It is their fault. What I'm saying is when you realize it, when you realize that this is not what you want, when you stay or if you stay, what is it around those thoughts? What is it around those feelings that make you do that? And if those are things that are hard for you to tease out, which it is for 99.999999999999, aka all of us to do, then this is where you make sure that you are getting resources and support to help you break this cycle, hun. Because it's not enough just to have this knowledge. You have to know not only where it comes from, but also what is getting in the way of you changing these thoughts and also what actual healthy love and everything looks like, and then also helping yourself feel worthy of it, and then also making this be your normal, and then also moving deeper with people once you're in healthier relationships, there's always growth for us to do. And so having our guides, having our coaches, having our support is vital. Okay. So that is it for today's episode. I hope that you found it helpful. And I'm so proud of you all for all the work that you are doing. So that's it for today. I look forward to seeing you in our next episode. And as always, take care of yourselves.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Before we get started, let's take a small break to say thank you to this week's sponsors.